I welcome each and everyone once again to the Bhakti Sangha Japa conference call. Today we are very fortunate to have His Grace Chaitanya Charan Prabhuji to enlighten us at the topic, how Balram helps Krishna delimit separation from Vrindavan. So before handing the call to Prabhuji, I would like to hand over the call to Raj Prabhuji to give the brief introduction about our speaker today. Raj Prabhuji, you can please take over the call.
Thank you, Mataji. Hare Krishna. Has Prabhuji joined?
Not yet, Prabhu.
So should I wait, Mataji?
Prabhuji, we can do introduction and we'll pause the record.
Okay, Mataji. Thank you. Thank you. Hare Krishna to all the devotees, assembled devotees here. Hare Krishna. Please accept my humble obeisances. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. His Grace Chaitanya Charan is a monk, mentor, and spiritual author. He has been educated in electronics and telecommunication engineering from the Government College of Engineering, Pune. He subsequently served as a software engineer in a prominent multinational software corporation. Seeing the prevalent problems of stress, depression, addiction, and overall misdirection, all due to lack of spirituality, he felt inspired to dedicate his life to the cause of sharing the spiritual wisdom of the Bhagavad Gita. He travels all over the world, from Australia to America, giving talks on spiritual subjects in universities such as Princeton and Cambridge and companies such as Intel and Microsoft. Prabhuji is the author of World's Only Daily Feature, Gita Daily Feature, wherein he writes daily a 300-word inspirational reflection on a verse from the Bhagavad Gita. As of now, he has written over 1,700 Gita meditations that are posted on gitadaily.com and are read through daily feeds by thousands from all over the world. He also answers questions by seekers on his website, www.thespiritualscientist.com. where his over 3,500 audio answers and several hundred articles are available. This is a brief introduction for Prabhuji. On to you, Mataji. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Raj Prabhuji, for giving so brief introduction.
Yes, Prabhuji.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. Dandavat Pranam. Please accept our humble obeisances. All goes to Srila Prabhupada and Guru Maharaj. Thank you so much, Prabhuji, for giving your very valuable time and association to enlighten us on the topic, how Balram helped Krishna delimit separation from Vrindavan. I would like to hand over the call to you, Prabhuji. Hare Krishna.
Thank you. Can you see me?
No,
Prabhuji.
Sorry, this is a little strange. My Zoom video is on. No, this is not that. It's peculiar.
Yeah, we can hear you, but we can't see you.
Okay. What about now?
No, Prabhuji. No, Prabhuji. No,
Prabhuji, we cannot see you.
Okay. Let us see now.
It's working now, Prabhu.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank
now
you.
We can see you.
Sorry for the inconvenience. Hare Krishna. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Shri Mate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namine नमस्ते सारस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देश थारिणे वांचाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधुभ्यैव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधार श्रीवासादि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा आई एम ग्रेटफुल टू बी हियर विद ऑल ऑफ यू एंड सॉरी फॉर द स्लाइट डिले इन जॉइनिंग सो आई विल टॉक अबाउट हाउ कृष्णा is helped by Balaram in dealing with separation from Vrindavan. So, generally speaking, when we talk about Lord Balaram's activities, we talk about his pastimes in killing the demons and his roles like that. The Gaudiya tradition, as we know, is focused on Vrindavan. So we'll be discussing from that perspective today, and I'll be using this PowerPoint, which may also act as a whiteboard. So these are the broad three topics I'll discuss: the speciality of Balaram's companionship, and then how Balaram understands and cares for Krishna's heart, and then why Balaram apparently goes against Krishna. This third point is a separate point. We may or may not get to it in today's session. So let's look at this. Now, if we consider Krishna's life, it is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and we can say that there are various aspects to his life. So his first stage of life, about 10 years, is in Vrindavan. And that is described in the Bhagavatam in chapters 1 to 40, in the 10th canto. Then he goes to Mathura. And then he goes to the Gurukul Navanti, where he's, that is also described briefly. So that's chapters 41 to 50. And then there is a extensive travel he has to Indraprastha, Hastinapur, Dwarka, Panchala's kingdom, but he's all based in Dwarka. That's chapters 51 to 90. So now, here, if we consider this division, geographically, they are very different places. Vrindavan and Mathura are culturally very different. Vrindavan is a rural place. It's a pastoral paradise. Mathura is typically an urban place. So sometimes some devotees, they have the idea that, you know, to live spiritually means that everybody in the past used to live in villages. No, it is not like that. The villages and cities were both there. In fact, that goes back to the time of Prithu Maharaj. But the point is, for Krishna, it was a significant cultural difference going from a village to a city and living there. And then from Mathura to Dwarka, Dwarka was a fort which was surrounded by the ocean. So these are significant life changes for Krishna. And through it all, if you consider in all phases of his life, there is one constant, and that was Balaram. Things changed. Even is for a small child, now what can be more traumatizing? You can say that few things are as traumatizing as knowing that my parents are not actually my parents. So this is, sometimes movies are made out about this. Somebody comes to know when they're 10 or 15 or 20, even when they're 30, that they were actually adopted. And they get disoriented. Who am I really? So are not their actual parents. So now in the Bhagavatam, at one level, Krishna is God and he knows everything. But at another level, Krishna is simply a child. And for Krishna, when he goes from Vrindavan to Mathura, it's a big change. So at that time, it is Balaram who is the steady force with him, who's always steady with him. Let's look at that. So to appreciate what Balaram does for Krishna, it's important to understand what Krishna is going through, what challenges Krishna is facing, and then we can appreciate what Krishna is doing for, what Balaram is doing for him. So if you consider for a small child, I mentioned this, when the Krishna Leela of the 10th canto is described in Gopal Champu from the Gaudiya perspective. That means how Krishna in Vrindavan is highest, and Krishna outside Vrindavan longs for Vrindavan. From that perspective, the 10th canto is described by Jiva Goswami. So now, normally speaking, what we talk about is that after Krishna left Vrindavan, the gopis are longing for Krishna. They're pining for Krishna. They're dying in separation from Krishna. Don't literally die, they're eternal, but they feel as if they want to die in separation for Krishna. However, Gopal Champu reveals that the love is not one-sided. Just as the gopis long for Krishna, Krishna too longs to return to Vrindavan, to be with the Vrijvasis, to be with the gopis, to be with all the devotees. And it is not just the gopis who are in great pain in separation from Krishna, But Krishna is also in great pain in separation from Vrindavan. So that is, Krishna is divine, but at the same time, he's not just the divine. He's also, as the Vedanta Sutra and the Upanishads describe, Nara Leela Kaivalyam. The ultimate reality performs Leela. And when he performs Leela, he acts like a human being. So Krishna did the impossible, something which even the Devatas could not do, when he killed Kamsa. But then, after that, we can't forget that he was just a 10-year-old boy. And when Krishna had told the gopis that I will return home, he was actually promised, he had full intention to return home. He had full intention to return home. And he finished his business over there. He manifested his divinity, his omnipotence in defeating Kamsa, but he wanted to come back home. However, he could not come back home. Why? Because he was torn between love and duty. So if you consider Krishna as a person in between, love. Because of love, he wanted to return to Vrindavan as quickly as possible and just be with the gopas, the gopis, the cows, and be in Vrindavan. That's what he longed for. But there was the duty. What was the duty? The Yadus came to him and the Yadus told him that you have killed Kamsa, but Kamsa had many powerful allies. And if you are not here, they will come and take revenge. They will wreak havoc on us. They will destroy us. So for our very sustenance, you need to be here with us. Please stay. And Krishna realized the reality of the threat that they faced. And Krishna had to decide to stay at that time. So at this point, it's like a 10-year-old boy. Sometimes, you know, there are children who are prodigies. So at one level, they have phenomenal talents. So a 10-year-old chess player might be able to defeat a 30, 40-year-old chess player, or I mean, a person who's a Grand Slam champion for 10 to 20 years also, a grandmaster or a big champion for 20 years. So they may have the ability, but do they have the maturity to take that pressure, to take that fame? So Krishna has got all this power. So Krishna has extraordinary ability, but Krishna also exhibits preternatural maturity. It is extraordinary. It is not natural for a small child to have this level of maturity. He has to play a particular, he has to do a particular service, he has to shoulder a particular responsibility. He does that. So with the Yadus, when he kills Kamsa, they offer him the crown. You defeated Kamsa, you become the king. And Krishna says, no. Actually, the crown belonged to Ugrasen, Maharaj Ugrasen, from whom it was taken by the wicked Kamsa. And now it has to be given back to Ugrasen. And then he doesn't at all say that I won't protect you. He accepts the responsibility of the ruler, but without the position, the prestige of the ruler. So normally, if you consider children, small children, they want to enjoy things and they don't think about the price of things. Oh, this is a toy, I want to play with this toy. This is the thing, I want to eat this. They don't think about responsibility, they think about enjoyment. Krishna is just a 10-year-old boy, but he's executing exact opposite. You know, what is he showing over here? Amazing maturity. Now, it is one thing that he responded to the Yadus that way. But then he had a much more difficult task. And when the Yadus told him, you have to stay here, then he had to go and tell his father, Nanda Maharaj, that I can't come back with you. And he said, Krishna very sweetly speaks over there. He says that they are taking the prophecy which said that the eighth son of Vasudeva will kill Kamsa, to say that I am that son. Actually, I know that I'm your son. But they're saying like this, and they're saying that they're in great danger. So I have to stay here with them. And then Nanda Maharaj says, how can we live without you? If you stay here, we'll also come and stay here. Then Krishna says, no, but we have so many cows. And where are the grazing land for the cows? Remember, we're all servants of the cows. So we cannot put the cows in discomfort for our own comfort. Then Nanda Maharaj says that, okay, then we will come and visit you everywhere regularly. Now, this was a very, very difficult discussion that Krishna had to have with his father to tell him, I'm not coming back. But Krishna again shows maturity. He's not crying. Generally speaking, difficult discussions for small children are not very easy to have. Say if the mother and the father have a fight, then it's better that the mother and the father have talk it out. Don't use the child to send an ugly message. The mother sends an ugly message to the father. The father sends a nasty message to the mother and through the child. So it was not like that exactly. But when Krishna had to do that role, Krishna did that role. So Krishna exhibits extraordinary maturity over here. So although he exhibits maturity, still it needs to be remembered that he's still a small child. Now Krishna, if you consider that, immense agony is there. There is no pain like the pain of being separated from one's loved ones. In Ramananda Rai, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Samvad, it is said that the greatest pain is the separation from devotees. Now, why is that? Because devotees love other devotees. Devotees sense the presence of Krishna in the association of other devotees. So, for Krishna, normally if you love someone, to be separated from them is an unbearable pain. So, Krishna was facing this agony. Now, why did he have to accept this agony? Broadly, there were three reasons. There was a physical, political, and social reason why Krishna felt immensely separated from the Vrajavasis. What are the physical reason? Before this, Krishna had never even left Vrindavan. He had not been separated from his parents even for a single day. Sometimes kids go for sleepovers to some other friends, but then immediately they come back. So that's a little bit separation from the, but Krishna, Krishna was always with Vrajavasis, with his mother and father. And now he had to be away for an indefinite amount of period. So that itself was very painful for a small child. But then I made this point that Nanda Maharaj said, we will regularly come and meet you. And Krishna said, no, you cannot come and meet me. Many times people ask, when the gopis were separated from Krishna so much, why didn't Krishna just go travel the distance from Mathura to Vrindavan and meet them? Why didn't Krishna do that? They were quite close to each other. The reason was Krishna was concerned about the safety of the Vrajavasis. Because he told them that if you keep coming regularly, my enemies will notice that you are very close to me. And in order to get back at me, instead of attacking Mathura, they may attack Vrindavan. And if I am in Mathura, I can protect Mathura, but I won't be able to protect Vrindavan. So for protecting Vrindavan, we have to make the world think that I have nothing to do with Vrindavan. In my childhood, that was a place where I was kept. And there were people who raised me over there. But once I came back to the city, came back to the Yadu's home, then I forgot all about that. So now when Krishna was speaking this, Nanda Maharaj's heart was weighing down and cracking. Will Krishna really forget us? So not only was Krishna separated, but there could not be any contacts also. And on top of that, we are far away from devotees, and because of, say, political upheavals, we cannot go and meet devotees. Maybe two countries are in a war, and the devotees, the community in another country or other state, and we can't go there. But then at least we can talk about about devotees, about Krishna. But what happened for Krishna? He, in Mathura, he couldn't even talk about Vrindavan. Why? Because the Yadus were always fearful that, you know, this Krishna is very attracted to Vrindavan. If he remembers Vrindavan, the more he will long for Vrindavan, and then he will leave us and go to Vrindavan. So the best way to deal with this is, the best way to prevent even the possibility of he going to Vrindavan is that we completely stamp out all talk about Vrindavan, all recollections about Vrindavan. So as soon as they would try to mention anything, as soon as Krishna would talk about Vrindavan, immediately they would all disapprove. And then what could Krishna do? Krishna became silent. Krishna was, after all, an obedient child, and he didn't want to disobey or displease his elders. So in this situation, now if you understand what has happened, we can imagine the agony of Krishna over here. And the only person with whom Krishna could talk freely about Vrindavan was Balaram. So that which was his heart's deepest need, his heart longed for nothing as much as talking about Vrindavan, discussing about the Vrajavasis. He could not do it with anyone except Balaram. Sometimes when we may have many official acquaintances, we may have some nominal friends, but suppose sometime we meet one person who just gets us. Oh, you know, you really understand what I'm saying. And then when they speak, we understand what they're saying. Then the match that happens, the relationship that clicks in place, it's so wonderful. So two people may be far away from each other physically, but if they understand each other, the relationship becomes very deep. So for Krishna, the only person who understood him was Balaram. And Balaram, in that sense, became the shelter, the solace, the strength of Krishna. And whenever Krishna would break down thinking about Vrindavan, he couldn't publicly break down, but the waves of recollection, the waves of memories of Vrindavan would keep coming to Krishna. And it was Balaram with whom he could discuss, Balaram who could understand, Balaram who could provide him solace. As I said, that they would privately discuss about Vrindavan. It is, first of all, to understand the predicament and then address the predicament. Understand the predicament and then address it. So the only person who could understand and address the predicament was Balaram. So Balaram addressed this predicament. And then what happened? Now, Vasudeva also noticed that, you know, Krishna is having difficulty adjusting to this place. Then he said, let us get Rohini back. So he called Rohini back. Now Rohini had been in Vrindavan and she came to Mathura also. But when Rohini started, so his purpose was that for Krishna, Rohini can act as a bridge between Vrindavan and Mathura. She was in Vrindavan. She knew him from childhood, but she is actually Mathura Vasi. But unfortunately, what happened is whenever Rohini would speak about Vrindavan and how the Vrajavasis loved Krishna so much and how Krishna loved the Vrajavasis, the Mathura Vasi started thinking, the Yadu started thinking, Rohini, are you on our side or their side? And have the Vrajavasis fed you so many sweets that you have forgotten whose side you are to, whose you are meant to be? And they started criticizing and suspecting her. And eventually Rohini fell silent. So Krishna and Balaram, they couldn't even talk much with Rohini. They poured out their hearts sometimes, but Rohini couldn't do much to help them. So the point is, it was Krishna who was helped in this very difficult time by Balaram in a very personal and intimate way. And that is the sweetness of Balaram's relationship and service to Krishna. Then, after that, Krishna had to go to the Gurukul. So, it's interesting. The Bhagavatam says that Krishna was initiated before he went to the Gurukul. So, initiation is a complex thing. Sometimes we think it's very simple. But the initiation was done by a priest, a guru, in Mathura. And then he went to the Sandipani Muri's ashram. So when he was in the ashram at that time, what happened was, just as he was getting to know his new family, just he was getting to connect with his new parents, he had to go away from them. And then if you consider Avanti, it is modern day Ujjain. It is almost on the other part of the country, other side of the country. Vrindavan and Mathura are on the eastern side, and Ujjain is in the middle, or on the little bit on the eastern. So it's quite far away, actually. So it's far, far away. So then there he could not even get any news of his old parents. That means of Vrajavasis. So at that time it is utter separation. You know, we can now, during the pandemic, many of us are separated from our family, our relatives, our friends. but at least we can connect with them by messages, by Skype, by Zoom, by WhatsApp. Imagine if along with a physical lockdown, there was a digital breakdown. Oh, life would have been unbearable. We can't get to know anything about the people whom we care for. And they can't get to know anything about us. That would have been horrible. So for Krishna, when he was in the Gurukul, it was like that. He had no news of Vrindavan. So what was happening was Nanda Maharaj, he knew that he couldn't come. He couldn't come to Mathura and Krishna couldn't come to Vrindavan. But Nanda Maharaj would send various messengers in different disguises. And they would bring some sweets for Krishna. They would ask Krishna about his welfare. And they did that they came to Mathura. Now, significantly, what Gopal Champu describes is that Krishna went privately and secretly to the Gurukul. Why? Because he knew that if his enemies, Kamsa's allies, his enemies came to know that Krishna is not in Mathura, they may attack Mathura and they may pillage, devastate Mathura. So Krishna wanted to keep his absence from Mathura secret. So that is so what happened is, so when he couldn't even send a message to the Vrajavasis that I am not here in Mathura, I've gone here. They couldn't send any message from there to here. So it was completely alone. And that time, Gopal Champu describes how Krishna and Balaram would learn their lessons from their guru. But at night, in their Gurukul, in their small corner, they would sit with each other and they would hug each other and they would bathe each other in tears of separation from Vrindavan. And Krishna would break down repeatedly and Balaram would console him. And soon realize that this separation is unbearable. Then Krishna suggested to Balaram and both of them agreed. What did they agree? They said, we will convert this education into a crash course. And we know Krishna learned everything. Krishna and Balaram learned everything in 64 days. Why they were so eager? They're eager to go back, externally speaking, they were eager to go back to Mathura because they had a duty to protect Mathura. But internally, from an internal reason perspective, Krishna wanted to go back to Mathura, which is closer to Vrindavan, so that he would get some news about Vrindavan. So that's how Krishna and Balaram, they survived those days together. And then after that, now we know that Krishna came back to Mathura, but then he moved to Dwarka. So now Dwarka is so far away from Vrindavan. In fact, Dwarka is further away from Vrindavan than even Ujjain, Avanti was. So why did Krishna move away? So just like in our tradition, when we have Lord Chaitanya's appearance, there is an external reason and there is an internal reason. The internal reason is more confidential. The external reason is concerned about the functioning of the outer world. The internal reason is more about the functioning of the heart. So similarly, Krishna's moving to Vrindavan, there's an external reason and there's an internal reason. The external reason was that the Yadus were being repeatedly attacked by enemies. And Krishna felt that these threats are becoming too much, so we need to defend the Yadus. Therefore, to protect them from such attacks, let's go to some other place. However, Jiv Goswami points out the problem with this reasoning. He says that Krishna never faced any serious challenge from an attacker. Whoever would come, Krishna would defeat them and defeat them quite easily. So Krishna didn't have to move away from Mathura just out of fear of what the enemies could do. He was competent enough to defeat any and every enemy. Krishna's real concern was that whenever, say, Mathura is here, Vrindavan is here, whenever any army would march toward Mathura, they would pass through Vrindavan. They would pass by the area of Vrindavan. And each time, the Vrajavasis had to take their cows, had to take their carts, had to take their flock of their children, their family, all of them, and they had to rush away from Vrindavan and they had to go to Govardhan and hide in the caves of Govardhan. Because when armies are marching, often they have needs. And if they find a particular village or town is flourishing, then they may plunder it. So now, of course, there are ideal Kshatriya codes where civilians are not to be tormented, not to be exploited. But these are demons. These demons, they're not going to follow the Kshatriya codes. So each time an army would come to attack Krishna, Vrindavan would get disrupted. And Krishna said that I cannot tolerate this. Each time the Rajvasis' lives have to get disrupted, the cows have to get disrupted, and they have to stay in a constricted space. I don't want this to happen. I don't want any inconvenience, leave alone any danger for the Vrajavasis. And that is why what he decided, what? I will go away from the Vrajavasis so that when my enemies come for me, they will not come anywhere near Vrindavan. Now this move was essential but extremely difficult for Krishna. So you could say the security considerations required it, but the heart resisted it. And it was, now he couldn't even share this reason with anyone. So it was Balaram who understood this reason. It was Balaram who solaced Krishna at that time and enabled him to again survive life far away from Vrindavan. Far away from Vrindavan in Dwarka. Now after that, when they were in Dwarka, it was Balaram who fulfilled Krishna's heart's desire. See, Krishna's heart longed to go to Vrindavan back, but he just couldn't do it. Why could he not do it? Because what happened was, Vasudeva and the Yadus would not want him to go to Vrindavan. And if he even desired to go to Vrindavan, that would displease the Yadus. And Nanda Maharaja told him, obey Vasudeva, obey your elders over here, just as you would obey me. So Krishna couldn't even make the suggestion that I want to go to Vrindavan. But Balaram could. Why? Because everybody knew that Balaram was the prince, Balaram was a Yadu. Balaram was the son of Rohini. So they had no fear that Balaram will go to Vrindavan and not come back. Krishna's parentage was a little suspect. The Acharyas describe that Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda actually never accepted that Krishna is not our son. So, and Garga Muni was also ambiguous when he spoke. So because the Vrajavasis still claimed parentage of Krishna, so the Yadus were very afraid of Krishna going over there. But they allowed Balaram to go. And when Balaram went in Krishna's place, what did he do? Balaram, he, in one sense, addressed Krishna's concern. The Vrajavasis shouldn't think that I don't care for them, I don't love them. He had earlier sent Uddhava, but Uddhava is a junior person. You know, if a senior person is coming, then what it means is, Krishna, for Krishna, Balaram is Dauji. He's older. So normally, for example, you know, if we have a class and say the speaker doesn't come, then the speaker may arrange some younger devotee to speak. So if the speaker arranges a more senior devotee than themselves, you can say, oh, that's extraordinary. How does that happen? Normally, when we are sending somebody as a substitute is a person who is, in a sense, lower than the normal person in the cricket team. And one player is substituted by another player. So one player gets injured or is unavailable. Substitute is not supposed to be better than the original. So when Krishna sends Balaram, or Krishna actually doesn't send Balaram, Krishna sends Uddhava, but this is Balaram's understanding. Balaram desires to go to Vrindavan. Balaram knows that this will satisfy Krishna's desire, will pacify Krishna's heart. And thus, he goes there. And he goes there, thus Krishna feels, yes, the Vrajavasis will not think that I don't care for them at all. In this way, Balaram goes. And Balaram not only satisfies Krishna, but when he goes to Vrindavan, he satisfies the Vrajavasis also. He speaks about Krishna. He performs various leelas with the various Vrajavasis. And thus the pangs of separation are decreased to some extent. This is in fact, Krishna's going to Vrindavan is one of the deepest and sweetest ways in which Krishna's heart and Krishna's heart is addressed by Balaram. So this is Balaram, who is how Balaram manages, helps Krishna endure separation from Krishna. Sorry, separation from Vrindavan. And Krishna is, that's why, deeply, eternally bonded with Balaram. They are inseparable and they are forever the divine brothers who delight in divine love. They have a shared love for Vrindavan and they share that love with each other also. This is the intimate relationship that Krishna and Balaram enjoy. So just as Balaram helps Krishna to endure separation from Krishna, so Balaram is also Balaram manifests for us as our spiritual master. Now we may feel no separation from Vrindavan right now. We may feel separation from money, from sleep, from food, from this, from that. You feel no separation from Vrindavan. But it is a spiritual master who awakens attraction for Vrindavan and then guides us to live in such a way that we can actually become increasingly attracted toward Vrindavan and ultimately attain Vrindavan. So this is the divine role that Balaramji plays in his relationship with Krishna. So there is one last part which I can speak, but if there are any questions, we can discuss the questions. Normally you finish at what time?
Around 7:20. In another 20 minutes, Prabhuji.
20 minutes, okay. So are there any questions at this stage?
If you're fine, we can take questions at last, Prabhuji. You can continue with the class.
So now, let's discuss the next part. We'll see how much we can discuss this. That, see, Balaram, he at one level addresses Krishna's very intimate need, personal need, in a very personal way. But, so, you know, love sometimes, how is love expressed? Love may be expressed through public expressions of love. So in romantic movies, somebody might make a big placard of, you know, I love you, or this or that. There are effusive expressions of love. In today's world, public PDA, public display of affection, is very common. Now, in one sense, Balaram, there are no effusive expressions of love. It is not that Krishna and Balaram see each other, they run towards each other and hug each other. That kind of description is not so much there. It is not there, but it is not so much there. So love can be expressed in many different ways. So privately, Balaram understands Krishna's heart. And there are many private expressions of love. But strangely enough, publicly, Balaram plays the contrary role. Privately, Krishna, no one understood and assisted Krishna as much as Balaram. And publicly, no one opposed, no close relative opposed Krishna as much as Balaram. So why is it like this? Now, what do we mean by Balaram opposes Krishna? We'll see this in many occasions. Let's look at a few occasions. But the principle is that the ways of love are mysterious. Love can be expressed in different ways. Sometimes in contrary ways that spice the relationship. So if a normal spousal relationship is there, you know, the wife gets angry and the husband pacifies and pleases her. So if people are, this is what is displayed in Krishna Leela. Now Rukmini is very gentle and mild. And Krishna wants her to act like Prasatabhama, get angry. So Krishna incites Rukmini by various ways. And then Rukmini gets angry. Normally anger won't be considered an expression of love. But Krishna wants that expression. So love can be expressed in ways that may not seem very loving. If A is criticizing B, A is making jokes at the expense of B, Maybe A is yelling their voice at B. May say, is there any love between A and B? But there might be. And the ways in which love can be expressed can be very different. So similarly, so Balaram expresses love for Krishna in a contrary way. Contrary way means what? He does opposes Krishna. Now, let's look at this. Three things, three incidents. There are many, but let's look at these three primarily. So, what happens is, Balaram opposes Krishna. So, what all? First is at Subhadra's wedding. So, when Subhadra is to be married, Balaram wants Subhadra to marry Duryodhan. But Subhadra herself is attracted to Arjuna. And Krishna also wants her to marry Arjuna. So then what does Krishna do? Krishna actually makes a whole conspiracy against Balaram and has Subhadra abducted by Arjuna. And when Balaram comes, when the Yadus come to know about this, they are ready to attack Arjuna. And then when Balaram is also furious, he has humiliated us. But Krishna stands up. He says, he has not humiliated us. And so you saw Subhadra was driving the chariot. So it was not a force. She wanted to be with him. So Balaram is angry. But Krishna silences him. Krishna stops him. So in one sense, Balaram has opposed Krishna's desire that Arjuna and Krishna be united. Although ultimately Krishna gets his way. So similarly, what happened is, if you consider Balaram trained Duryodhan in mace fighting. So why would you do something like that? Duryodhan is evil. But he was the opponent of the Pandavas. They were dear to Krishna. They were devotees of Krishna. And not only Balaram gave some tips. Like casually somebody asks us and we are good at something, we give them some tips. Balaram actually systematically trained Duryodhan. And Duryodhan became so expert by Balaram's tutelage that he actually became better in mace fighting than Bhima. He became better in what sense? That he was more skilled. Bhima was stronger in physical brute strength. But in sheer skill of mace fighting, Balaram made Duryodhana better. And then if you consider, so here also what is doing? Balaram is going against Krishna's plan. Krishna wants his devotees, the Pandavas, to win. And Balaram seems to be equipping those who are on the opposite side. What is going on here? Why would somebody do like this? And the most graphic, most dramatic, most alarming opposition or confrontation between Krishna and Balaram comes after the final fight between Bhima and Duryodhan. So because Duryodhan has been blessed by his mother, that his whole body has become invulnerable. So the only way Bhima can win is by hitting him below the belt, hitting him on his thighs. And on seeing that, Balaram is furious. And Balaram races towards Bhima to kill Bhima. And surprisingly, Bhima, who never flinches, who never backs down from a fight, and Balaram comes towards him, Bhima just puts aside his weapons. He says, if Balaram wants to kill me, I can't do anything. So, but it is Krishna who intervenes. And Balaram is furious. Krishna stops Balaram. And Krishna argues with him. And Krishna says that, why are you looking only at this one action? Remember all the things that this wicked Duryodhan had done. This was the end he deserved to meet. Now, we won't go into the ethics of this particular action. That could be a separate class in itself. But the point is, Krishna has to physically restrain Balaram over here. There's quite an opposition. So what is happening by this opposition? Actually, Krishna is, generally speaking, if something goes very easily, then there is not much excitement. Now, if there is a movie in which, say, a hero and heroine are separated, and then the hero and heroine meet each other, and they come together with each other. There is no villain, there is no tension, there is no opposition. Then there is no excitement, there is no adventure. Generally speaking, what makes a story exciting is tension, opposition. So Krishna, in his Leela, he wants opposition to spice the Leela, to make it more attractive. So now, who can oppose the Supreme? The Supreme is all powerful. So it is the best opposition to the Supreme can come only from the Supreme. And thus it is that Balram opposes Krishna to spice their relationship, to spice the Leelas to the supermost degree. Now we see this idea of those who are devoted taking roles in opposition to Krishna. There are of course demons who oppose Krishna, but there are even the devoted who oppose Krishna. And among them, Balram is the highest. So we know that Shishumal and Dantavakra, Ravan and Kumbhakarna, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, they opposed the Lord. And we know they were Jai Vijay who had appeared in these forms so that Krishna would enjoy Maushal Leela, the Leela, the joy of fighting. So that is his own associates taking on opposite roles. So again, this is the point of, now here this is a little more external because there's a curse involved also. Now Bhishma, he also fights against Krishna. All the Bhishma's heart is completely devoted to Krishna. Yet Bhishma fights against Krishna. Why? And not only does he fight against Krishna, he actually shoots at Krishna's devotee Arjuna and he shoots even at Krishna. And Krishna gets wounded. Shita Vishit, it's described in the Bhagavatam that at his Vishirna Damshaha, that his forehead was tainted with blood from the arrows of Krishna. So here also Bhishma is allowing Krishna to release that virya rasa, that the joy of fighting against someone who is powerful, although they are devoted. Now we could say here also Bhishma, there was no curse involved, but there was an oath involved. Bhishma had taken a vow or given a promise to his father that he had made a vow basically that he would always defend the ruling king. He had given this vow to Satyavati's father so that Satyavati would marry his father, Shantanu. That's a big story. But the point I'm making is Shishupal, Dantavakra and Bhishma, their opposition to Krishna had some external cause. Either it was a curse or it was an oath. But Balaram's opposition to Krishna has no cause at all. There's no cause except to serve Krishna, except to provide, make Krishna Leela more exciting. And in this sense, this devotion in opposition is manifested the superlative degree by Balaram. And this is actually the supremely selfless service. Why a selfless service? Because generally when we do something good, we want to be appreciated for it. It's just a human need. We can't say it's always ego. It's basically a human need. We do some service, at least some people who are concerned, they should know it, they should appreciate it, they should value us for it. But if you're doing service very privately, nobody knows that service. So what is Balram's extraordinary position? That he serves Krishna's needs in the most intimate and essential way privately. This is indispensable for Krishna. But this private service is not known to the world. So therefore, he may not get as much credit as he deserves. And in contrast, there is public opposition. And public opposition, when he opposes like this, why did he support Bhishma? Why did he support Duryodhan? That question is quite bewildering. And people may think of that as a defect in his character. No, maybe he got into illusion. Maybe he got attached to Duryodhan. And that is why it happened. So in that sense, Balaram, he does not get credit for what he does. And he gets criticism for what he does. What he does privately, he gets no credit. For what he does publicly, he has to accept criticism. So what does one get in return? Even when one doesn't get anything in return, at that time one continues serving, that is the supreme service. Ahaituki apratihata. So Balaram embodies that service. And when that kind of service is done, what happens is, Chayatma suprasidati. The Atma becomes fully content. Why? Because in the heart, Krishna appears, Krishna manifests, and he provides the supreme fulfillment. So yes, it's a selfless service, but to be selfless is not to leave the self with less. And the self is not deprived. The self is supremely fulfilled because Krishna enriches the heart. Krishna completely fulfills the heart. So Balram's heart is filled with Krishna, and thus he's supremely fulfilled. So Balram not only is a guru who guides us on the path of devotion, but he also demonstrates the supremely selfless devotion by his personal example. Such is the extraordinary glory of Balramji. So I'll summarize. Today we talked about how Balaram serves Krishna. That three parts we discuss. How Balaram is, his unique relationship with Krishna is that he is the sole constant in Krishna's life when his life is having enormous and disorienting changes from a rural setting to a completely urban setting, from his family members to away from his family members for an indefinite period of time, and having to fight against big enemies, go from one part of the country to the opposite part of the country. Through it all, for Krishna, the one person who is there in Vrindavan, Mathura, Dwarka, and also in all of them is Balaram. So, to appreciate how much Balaram means for Krishna and to appreciate what Balaram does for Krishna, we need to recognize what Krishna was going through. Although he is God and all, he's still a 10-year-old child at that in his Naralila. And as a child, huge responsibility is thrust on him. The responsibility to protect the whole kingdom of the Yadus, the responsibility to tell his own father, Nanda Maharaj, that I cannot come back with you. He gallantly takes those responsibilities, but they cost him a lot. They take a lot out of him. And when he's trained, when he needs shelter and strength, it is Balaram who provides him shelter and strength. Krishna cannot even stay in touch with the Vrajavasis because for their protection. We discussed three reasons. If the separation was agonizing, because physically he was far away from the Vrajavasis. He was away from the Vrajavasis. Politically, he could not maintain any contact for the safety of the Vrajavasis. And socially, he couldn't even talk about Vrindavan and Vrajavasis because the Yadus disapproved. So even when Rohini came, she couldn't help much because she was suspected and silenced when she started espousing the glories of Vrindavan. So then the only person with whom Krishna could talk was Balaram. And especially when Krishna had to leave even any contact with Vrindavan, and when he went to Avanti, then at that time, away from his new home and new parents, with no news of his old parents, he could have been a complete breakdown, but it is Balaram who consoled him, who strengthened him. And eventually, Krishna moves from Mathura to Vrindavan, to Dwarka, not just to protect the Yadus, but to protect the Brajavasis from having their lives disrupted by the enemies. So, at that time, it was the move to Dwarka again took a lot out of Krishna. It was Balaram who gave him strength. And Balaram fulfilled Krishna's heart's desire to show his loving concern for the Brajavasis by personally choosing to go to Vrindavan. And then lastly, we discuss, so this is his enormous service. So is privately he's doing extraordinary service, but then publicly he opposes Krishna. Three incidents. Subhadra's wedding, then Duryodhan's training, and then Duryodhan's final defeat. So why does he oppose? Because opposition makes things exciting. Tension is what makes a story riveting. So Krishna to make his Leela exciting, sometimes has his devotees oppose him. But when the devotees oppose, they have some reason. Jai Vijay were cursed. Bhishma had an oath. But Balaram had no reason, externally speaking. And yet he opposed time and again. Why? Only when the Supreme opposes the Supreme, will the Supreme have the Supreme excitement. And Balaram's service is supremely selfless. because private service may not be known to the world, and so it will not be appreciated. And public opposition will lead to criticism, will lead to questioning. But through it all, Balaram remains faithful to Krishna. Balaram does what is required for the service of Krishna, and that is his glorious devotion. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Thank you so much, Prabhuji, for such a beautiful and wonderful class and also summarizing everything. We are so thankful for you, Prabhuji.
Thank you, Tiffany, for your comment about yes, the selfless is not to leave the selfless. Got a good point over there. And yes, Mataji, happy to be of service. Adarani Mataji. Does the guru sometimes oppose Krishna? No, the guru never opposes this question from Pranjal Prabhu. No. See, there is something which is in the Krishna Leela. There are some things which represent some things. There are symbolisms. So, if we try to mix symbolism with Leela, sometimes things can get messed up. We should know when the transcendental and the representational or metaphorical, they can be brought together and when they can't be brought together. So, if we consider where it can be brought together, in some places where the whole Leela, the whole, we could say, that the rasa is maintained over there. Only if the rasa is maintained, then it works. But if the rasa is not maintained, then it becomes problematic. So in this case, the guru represents Krishna, but if the guru opposes Krishna, not exactly. The guru ultimately wants to fulfill the desire of Krishna. But sometimes the guru may also desire to serve Krishna in a way that is different from Krishna's desire. So Prabhupada, during his final days, when his sickness went on and on and on, Prabhupada decided, I just want to leave this body. And he stopped eating food. He just prepared to depart by Prayavrata, just taking a little Charanamrita and waiting for the body to fall down. But then the devotees begged to him, and Prabhupada said that Krishna has left the decision to me. They really? He said, then please stay. And then Prabhupada started taking food. And Prabhupada's health improved significantly for some while. But then after that, the health went down. So Prabhupada, in response to his devotee disciples' desire, their earnest request, he desired to live. But then, when again his body started deteriorating and the deterioration was quite severe, Prabhupada saw that as Krishna's signal. And Prabhupada accepted. And Prabhupada had started an international tour again. He had even gone to England on his way to America, but he immediately came back to Vrindavan. So yes, sometimes the devotee may have a desire that is different from the desire of the Lord, but that also pleases the Lord. But the devotee ultimately submits to the Lord. Krishna wants to run away from Mother Yashoda, and Mother Yashoda sometimes ties Krishna. And yet, ultimately, it is out of her love for Krishna. So love doesn't mean like slavish obedience. Our devotion, it's not that Krishna is God and we are all his slaves. So we can have no desires of our own. Our desires also, because if they are coming from a devoted heart, they can also please Krishna. But in general, that kind of symbolism may not apply, because what is happening in Vrindavan is very, very, is at a completely categorically different plane of existence. So, what is happening in Krishna Leela? Not everything which is happening in Krishna Leela can be correlated to the symbolism of in our experience. Okay.
Thank you, Prabhuji. Mm-hmm. We have like Anuradha Devi Mataji. Please go ahead with your question.
Yes, Mataji.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, I'm sorry I could not unmute myself. Thank you. Like I second with every word that Tiffany Mataji wrote. Such a different perspective and so wonderful. So it's like now literally like with Krishna, it is easy to get emotionally also connected. But now you have given us Balaramji as well. Prabhu, thank you so much. Koti koti dandavat for that, Prabhu. Thank you. So I had two doubts or question. You spoke about Balaramji and our Guru. So would you please give some more information on that, Prabhu, so that, you know, we can understand it in the right perspective.
Okay. How does Balaramji represent our Guru?
You said that our Guru comes in our life and then how he brings Krishna in our life. That's what you were saying.
So yes, so the correlation is not exactly precise. What I was saying is that just as Balaram acts as a bridge between Vrindavan and Krishna, he helps Krishna endure the separation and he helps Krishna get the remembrance of Vrindavan that can offer him some solace while he's separated from Vrindavan. So similarly, we are all separated from our eternal home. We are all separated from Vrindavan. So the Guru comes in our life and gives us remembrance. So for us, of course, most of us, we may not feel separation from Vrindavan. So for us, the spiritual master gives us the knowledge of Krishna Katattva, Krishna Lila, so that we start first developing some attraction for Vrindavan. So the remembrance of Vrindavan starts triggering attraction for Vrindavan. And then after that, as the remembrance of Vrindavan goes further, as our attraction to Krishna increases more and more, then that remembrance also leads to separation, and the remembrance also leads to pacification of the separation. The more we love something and love someone, we remember that person, we feel separated from that person. But we get some more news of that person, we get learn something more about them. Then that pacification is, that separation is to somewhat mitigated, somewhat addressed. So basically, just as Balaramji helps through recollection and emotion, keeps Krishna connected with Vrindavan, so the Guru also keeps us connected with Vrindavan by giving us things to remember, learn and remember about Vrindavan and helping us develop emotions toward Vrindavan and Krishna.
Okay. Thank you, Prabhu. But regarding that, I have like another follow-up on that. Prabhu, like for Paramatma, we say that Paramatma is our Chitta Guru and Guru is our external manifestation of that. In this is Paramatma, who is Krishna, and then Guru. But then we call Balaramji as Guru Tattva. How do I reconcile this to Prabhu? Is my question clear, Prabhu?
No, I didn't get. Can you repeat the question?
Yes, definitely. We say that Paramatma is our, you know, internal or Chitta Guru. And our Gurudev, who has given us initiation, okay, or us shelter, he is external. So where is Balaramji? Why is Balaramji called as a Guru Tattva or Guru, you know, origin of Gurudev?
Mm-hmm. If the Paramatma is there in our hearts, then... How exactly is that related to Balaram and Guru, our Guru? Well,
yeah.
We have to, this is a little bit more philosophical and maybe a separate technical class I can explain this, but briefly here, sure. See, if you understand that how the universe expands, from Krishna comes Balaram, from Balaram we have the four quadruple expansions, the first one, Vasudeva, Sankarshan, Pradyuman, and Yuddha. And then from there, we have Narayan. And then we have the second Vasudeva, Sankarshan, Pradyumna, Aniruddha. And from there, we have Mahavishnu, Garbhodaksha Vishnu, and Shirodaksha Vishnu. So Shirodaksha Vishnu is Paramatma in our hearts. So yes. Now if you consider in the sequence, Krishna to Balaram, Balaram to the Chaturvyuha, Chaturvyuha to Narayan, Narayan to Chaturvyuha again, then Chaturvyuha to Dvitiya Chaturvyuha to the Purusha Avataras, and the last of the Purusha Avataras is Shirodaksha Vishnu. So yes, in one sense, the Paramatma is an expansion of Balaramji itself. You can say, I mean, Balaramji comes from Krishna, so Paramatma is an expansion of Krishna also. That is true. But functionally speaking, Krishna is not really concerned with the management of the world. Krishna outsources that. And the agent through whom he outsources that is Balramji. So the Paramatma is in one sense a expansion of Balramji. So
yes,
our Chaitya Guru. So in one sense, it is by Balram's mercy that the Paramatma, it is when we say Balram's mercy, comes as the Paramatma's mercy, guides us towards spiritual growth. And then it is also Balramji, when a soul takes up the responsibility for sharing Krishna's message, at that time, that soul is empowered by Balramji. So the external guru is also getting some energy empowerment from Balramji. So yes, Balram and Paramatma are in one sense one, because one has come from the other.
Thank you, Prabhu. That's so beautiful. So you said that Balaramji knows Krishna the most. How about Srimati Radharani, Prabhu? About Krishna's heart.
Of course. Now, does Radharani know Krishna the most? See, in general, in spiritual life, there can be many bests. So it is not that there is only one best. Balaram and Radharani have their own mood of relationship with Krishna. So when we are glorifying a particular aspect of bhakti, a particular deity, a particular associate of the Lord, at that time, the whole mood of bhakti is just glorify that manifestation completely. If you consider the Sthala Puranas in various places, if you go to Vrindavan, Vrindavan is the greatest of all holy places. If you go to Jagannath Puri, Jagannath Puri is the greatest of all holy places. If you go to Navadvip, Navadvip is the greatest of all holy places. So each holy place, the Sthala Purana glorifies it as if it is the greatest. So the idea is,
you got stuck, we can't hear you.
Or I better explain my... So if I'm in... So if we are in Vrindavan at that time, we shouldn't think Vrindavan is less and Mayapur is better and better. I should be spending that time in Mayapur, not in Vrindavan. No, if you're in Vrindavan, this is glorious. Just bathe in the mercy. So whichever manifestation of Krishna's mercy is there for us, we need to fully avail ourselves of that. That is the mood of devotion. So yes, it's Balram's appearance or Balram's appearance. They will describe how Balram is the most intimate. Serves Krishna most intimately. And yes, then we can give a particular frame of analysis. As I said, that they are together for the most amount of time through various phases in life. But there's another way of looking at it, is that Radharani exists forever in Krishna's heart closest. Krishna exists in Radharani's heart the closest. So if you're discussing Radhashtami, then we'll discuss from a different perspective and we'll see how Radharani is the closest. So in spiritual life, there can be many bests. And rather than seeing that as comparative and contradictory, we focus on seeing that as more of encouraging and inspirational for us to avail of Krishna's mercy wherever it is available. Okay.
Thank you, Prabhu. Hare Krishna, Dhanrat Brahm. Thank you so much, Prabhu.
Thank you so much, Prabhuji, for beautiful answers. We had one question in the chat, or you want to go with the raised hands, Prabhuji?
Okay, I'm okay with either.
Okay, I'll read the chat question. How old was Krishna when he married Rukmini? Why he did not marry Radha also, who was in the separation in Vrindavan? Is the reason only that he wanted to save Rajavasis, not having any connection? From Raj Prabhuji.
Maybe in Radha has to be class, I'll answer this question. It's an elaborate question. But essentially, this quickly I'll mention that. Why did Krishna not marry Radharani? that is actually, in one sense, to highlight the complete selflessness of Radharani's love. That she offered herself completely to Krishna. And she did not get anything from Krishna. She did not get his association. And she did not get even his name. That means at least he's legally wedded to his wife. Legally wedded to him as his wife. So sometimes husband and wife have to be separated because of job or other considerations. But at least you are connected by name. Officially, the person is married. But Radharani gets nothing from Krishna. And she offers herself completely to Krishna. So Radharani demonstrates that supreme love. Completely selfless. So that parakiya ras, that where there is no swakiya bhav, that there is the love is not formalized through marriage. It is considered the highest level of love because it exhibits the highest level of selflessness. We can discuss this maybe later when we talk about Radharani. Okay.
Yeah, thank you so much, Prabhuji. And we had one more question from you.
So I see that question that how do we understand that Krishna is all blissful when he is feeling so much separation from Radharani?
Yes.
Like I mentioned, the ways of love are mysterious. So Chaitanya Charitamrita used the example that love for Krishna is like hot sugarcane juice. Now it's hot, so one can tolerate drinking. Can't tolerate it, but it's so delicious that one can't stop drinking it. So it's like that. So we can say that remembrance of those whom we love, that itself is a source of joy. So for the gopis, remembering Krishna is a source of joy. And for Krishna, remembering his devotees. They are all pure devotees. They are exalted. Radharani is, in one sense, non-different from Krishna. She is the divinity in the female form. So for Krishna, remembering Radharani is a source of joy. However, that remembrance can be flavored in different ways. So we could say that it's like the remembrance of Krishna itself is nectar. But some nectar is sweet nectar. And some nectar is bitter nectar. And we say, well, how can the nectar be bitter? But yes, it feels bitter. It's nectar. It's actually great joy to remember Krishna. So when Krishna and Radha are united, that is sweet nectar. When Krishna and Radha are separated, that is also nectar. That is bitter nectar. The remembrance is more intensified. It's far, far more intense. And still, it is the same remembrance. Still, because it is in separation, so it seems like agony. But it is the greatest ecstasy. So that is the paradox of love. The paradox of divine love is that what seems like agony, what seems like misery is actually the supreme ecstasy. Because at the foundation level, there is remembrance of Krishna. In contrast, in the material world, we could say forgetfulness of Krishna and everything that happens at that level of forgetfulness is like poison. Now, at the material level, sometimes when we experience misery, that is like bitter poison. And when we experience pleasure at the material level, that is like sweet poison. But for the soul, it is poison because it poisons the soul's spiritual inclinations. It weakens and it ruins the soul's spiritual longings. Okay?
Yeah, thank you so much, Prabhuji. Now I request Sureshwar Shyam Prabhuji. You can please go ahead, Prabhuji.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Thank you, Prabhu, for the nice class. Prabhuji, one question is this one. It is not very evident, Prabhu, when we read like what you told, right, about Balramji's service today. When we read different pastimes or Krishna book, this part is not very evident, Prabhu. How do we, you know, uncover these kind of aspects and understand Balramji's service towards Krishna?
I think it is difficult. I agree with you. It's
at one point.
What was I saying? That actually, that's why the living tradition is very important. We understand the mood from various books. We understand the mood from our acharyas. And then in general, in our spiritual life, we learn a lot more by hearing than by reading. Reading is important for relishing. Reading is important as a mood of service. But most of the, if you see throughout history, in the past, books were very, very rare. So books were very, very rare. So because books were rare, most of the bhakti tradition was sustained by the oral tradition. And the oral tradition is extremely important. We cannot expect that the oral tradition can be appended or replaced by the written tradition at any time. Actually, books themselves are a relatively modern invention. Therefore, the widespread availability of books that can be read for 300, 400 years since then, we say Gadadhar Pandit couldn't get a copy of Chaitanya Charitamrita so easily. So that is a challenge in general. So I think the oral tradition is extremely important for us. We hear from devotees. I have heard from many different devotees. And I have tried to learn some things. I've read some things, heard some things, ask questions, try to understand, and then trying to share. So what all of you are having in the Bhakti Sangha regular classes, where you have so many serious devotees joining regularly. Now this is so vitally important and so laudable, so glorious, because this is the oral tradition being continued. And the oral tradition is the greatest source of nourishment. Yes, we do need to read scriptures, but most of us will follow the way, will be following the way throughout history people have followed. That is learning by the oral tradition. Okay?
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much. One more question, Prabhu. Prabhu, it is said that in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Balram, Lord Balram is the first bodily expansion of Krishna. And he assists Krishna in his transcendental pastimes, right? So, Prabhu, yeah.
Yes, please go ahead.
Yeah, so saying that Balram is the first bodily expansion, what about Radharani? Radharani is the second bodily expansion, or like from that perspective, how do we understand?
Okay, it's again, I think Radha Tattva is a separate Tattva. So if Balram is the first expansion of Krishna, then is Radharani not an expansion? Okay. There is Tattva and there is Leela. So Tattva means in terms of philosophical categories of truth. What is the nature of truth? What is the nature of reality? And Leela is in terms of reciprocation. So now, if we want to talk in terms of philosophical truths, everyone is eternal. Even the soul is eternal. Nitya. So in one sense, the soul never comes from Krishna. The soul is co-eternal with Krishna. The soul is co-eternal with Krishna. And if we as souls are co-eternal with Krishna, then what to speak of Balramji or what to speak of Radharani? So it is not that there was a time when Krishna alone existed and then others came into existence. Yes, there are statements like Eko Bahusyam, where one became many. But then there are other statements also, Nityo Nityanam, that there are many, there is one special Nitya among many other Nitya. So when we talk about one being coming from the other, it is not meant to be in a time denotational sense. Oh. It is meant to be more in a philosophical truth conveying sense. So what do I mean by that? That when we say that as souls we come from Krishna or Balramji comes from Krishna, it is more more to convey the idea that things in this world, that they have a particular flavor of relationship, and in the flavor of that relationship, they function in a particular way. So in my understanding, we don't have to make this first of all. It's not a matter of chronology. It's a matter of ontology. Chronology means it's history. This comes this chronologically, this comes after this, the sequence in which things happen. But it is not so much in the sense of chronology, it is more in the sense of ontology. Ontology means the nature of reality. So what is the nature of reality? That Krishna is the ultimate reality. And that ultimate reality manifests in many different ways. So when he manifests in different ways, each of those manifestations is also eternal. But in another sense, this manifestation is dependent on other manifestations. So if we consider the sun as we know it, so the sun and the sun rays always exist together. The sun rays come from the sun. But the sun, at the same time, can we really convey can we really think of a time when the sun existed without the sun rays? It's very difficult to conceive that. So we could say, okay, these rays came from the sun and this ray came first and that ray came second, that ray came third. Well, that's okay. So it's more in terms of understanding the nature of the relationship and the flavor of the relationship that we talk about this time denotational sense. We talk about sequence in that sense. It is more in the sense of the understanding of the nature of reality and the nature of relationships in reality. So with respect to how the material world evolves, from that perspective, how things in the material world manifest, there's a particular sequence. But ultimately, all these characters are eternal. So this chronological and ontological sense, I have an article on geetadaily.com. I have provided a link for that in the chat. You can read that in due course. Okay?
Yeah. Thank you very much. It's clear. Hare Krishna.
Thank you so much, Babaji, for a beautiful answer and sharing that. Now I request Amrita Gaurangi Mataji.
So there is one question about is sweet poison worse than bitter poison? Yes, definitely it can be. If we don't realize that it is keeping us away from Krishna, then it can be more dangerous. Yes. So last question now, or was there a question? Amrita Gaurangi? Yeah.
Yes, Prabhu. Dandavat pranams. All
Dandavat, yes.
So, Prabhu, I'm really impressed by the point that you made about selfless is not being less or not becoming less. So, can you elaborate on that, Prabhu? Because though many of us start enthusiastically to be selfless, eventually, I think the focus or the real intent doesn't be there, and it becomes we start feeling less because of the reciprocation of the services. So, how do we nourish ourselves from within?
Okay. And
power ourselves with the fulfillment that Krishna gives us when we are selfless.
Okay, correct. So how does selflessness not actually less for the self? Because sometimes we may feel that we are doing so much, but we are not getting reciprocation. And then we may feel that we are being deprived. Yes. So that's why it's important to act according to our adhikar. Act according to our adhikar means if we feel that there is a need for something, then we need to seek that. So why do our bhakti scriptures say anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya varjanam? And this is not just give up non-devotional things and take up devotional things. Anukulyasya sankalpa also means seek sajatiya sangha, seek like-minded association. Like-minded association means that association that understands us, association that appreciates us, association in which we feel welcomed, accepted, valued. So we need that. Sometimes we reduce all our social needs to simply an expression of the ego. No, they could also be basic human needs. If we come to a place, if we come to a program, and not a single person looks at us, not a single person nods at us, not a single person greets us, we may naturally think, you know, what am I doing coming here? Am I wanted here? And if we feel hurt, is that the ego? Well, it's not the ego. It's the culture should be such that if somebody is coming, people welcome that person. So there is a human need for connection, for appreciation. And that is different from the ego's need for being the center of everything, the ego is not, ego wants not only that I should be recognized, but I should be recognized as the best. I should be at the center of everything. So sajati sangha means that association where we are accepted, valued, and and we feel a sense of belonging over there. So it is our responsibility to seek that. So selfless, we serve selflessly. What does it mean? That means, yes, we don't want anything material from Krishna. That is selflessness. And do we not want anything spiritual from Krishna? Well, we can say that devotees don't even want liberation. But at our stage, we do want some reciprocation so that we can go closer to Krishna. We need that reciprocation. That is the necessary fuel for continuing our spiritual journey. So if we are feeling deprived or we are feeling devalued or we are feeling dejected, de-energized, demoralized, then it is our responsibility to seek association, to seek the association that will help us get the nourishment. So in one sense, we could say maturity, we can define it as not that we don't need anyone, but that it means that we recognize that no one is obliged to fulfill our needs. That each one of us, we have certain needs. Like a small child starts crying. And the child expects that, okay, if I'm crying, my mother or some elder should run and feed me. And they do that. But if an adult is hungry and adult starts crying, well, will the world run to feed the adult? No. But does that mean that the adult's hunger is not real? It's real. But what the adult understands is, it is my responsibility. Maybe I have to buy some food, cook it. Maybe I go out somewhere and get some food and eat it. So we all need to become mature. Mature means, I'll put a link to a Gita Daily article, that maturity means to acknowledge that no one is obliged to fulfill our needs. That doesn't mean our needs are not important and that our needs may not be fulfilled. But different devotees are of different natures. So if we have a particular need of connection and that connection is not happening, that need is not being addressed in a particular relationship, particular devotional community, particular devotional relationship, then it is for us to find out where it can be addressed. That is the meaning of Sajatiya Sangha. So at our level, we can say we want to be selfless, but at our levels, we don't want to become so selfless that it is unsustainable for us. So we need to recognize that my needs have to be taken care of. We can say the Goswamis are so selfless that they would not even eat food. Yes, that is an exalted level of selflessness. Can we be at that level of selflessness? No, we will just die if we try to do that, try to live on buttermilk once in 2-3 days. So it's for us, our adhikar. Okay, this is my level. At this level, I can be selfless at this much level. But beyond this, it's not possible for me. And that level may also expand as we grow in our spiritual life. So we all need to be selfless, but we could say proportionately selfless according to our adhikar. And if we feel discouraged because we are giving too much and don't feel that we're not getting, then we have to see what is lacking and how that lacking can be addressed and take responsibility for that. Then we will feel nourished in our spiritual life. That spiritual level of advancement where we just need no reciprocation from anyone, that is very, very rare. It's not so easy to get at all. Even Prabhupada, many of his godbrothers did not understand him properly and sometimes they would criticize him and Prabhupada would feel quite hurt by that. Prabhupada said, I'm just carrying on their mission, our guru's mission. That, and whenever he had an opportunity to associate with those of his godbrothers who understood him, Prabhupada delighted in that association. Prabhupada would spend so much time and his disciples saw a completely different side of him. Not as acharya giving instruction, but just as a friend relating with a friend. So Prabhupada also, when he got that association, he chose that association. And so he chose and cherished that association. So for us also, if we have particular needs, and we certainly will have, what to speak of, based on our stature right now and the sadhakas, so it is our responsibility to have those needs fulfilled. Okay?
Thank you very much, Prabhu. Very satisfying answer. Thank you.
So thank you very much. Shri Balaram
Prabhuji,
ji. Yeah, sorry. Yes,
sorry, if you have any time, can I ask one question?
He said that was last question.
Okay, last question.
Yeah. So did Balaramji did not feel that separation, Prabhuji, from Vrindavan, like Krishna when he left? He also left like same time like Krishna, right? So being
yeah,
held.
Of course. I mean, so that's why if Balaramji was not feeling any separation, then he would not have been able to understand Krishna's separation. So he did feel it. At the same time, it's we understand it is Krishna who is the ultimate supreme personality of Godhead, or the original personality of Godhead. And then it is Krishna who is the heartthrob of Vrindavan. Balaram is of course there. But here our focus was in Krishna is the Supreme Lord, Krishna is Rasaraj, and how Balaram serves him. So yes, Balaram also felt separation from Vrindavan, definitely. But here, because we're talking about how Balaram is so wonderful associate of Krishna, so we focus on Krishna's separation and how Balaram addressed that separation.
Okay.
Okay.
And one last question, Prabhuji. So you were saying that Krishna got initiation before going to Gurukula, right? So before that, he was having any guru or something in the class, you are saying, right? He got initiation before going to Gurukula.
Yeah, I mean, that is a big subject in itself.
Okay.
So the point I was making is that initiation was variegated. It was not so strictly formalized in the past. The overall understanding was there's a deep respect for Brahminical culture. And the Mahabharata is 110,000 verses. But the Mahabharata doesn't spare even half a verse to tell who is the guru of the Pandavas. Gopayet Guru, I think the Goswami say that. Keep your guru a secret. You don't have to broadcast to the world who the guru is. The guru is for your personal nourishment. That is one approach to having a guru also. So the point I was making is that, yes, of course, our Diksha Guru is important and initiation is important. But the point I was making that, giving you that example, that the Bhagavatam says that before he goes to the Gurukul, Vasudev performs the second initiation, the Brahman initiation of Krishna and Balaram. And the point in saying that is that so initiation and instruction were two separate things. And because Krishna Balaram got their primary instructions from Sandipani Muni, so for all posterity, Sandipani Muni is considered to be the guru of Krishna and Balaram. And who performed that initiation ceremony? The Bhagavatam doesn't even mention that. Now we could say Namakaran was performed by Gargamuni, but Namakaran is not exactly the same as guru, taking a guru or becoming a disciple. So this could be a whole discussion, but the key point is that we don't have to overemphasize the point of initiation alone. Instruction is equally, if not more important. So we have Diksha Guru and we have Shiksha Gurus. And because especially now, because our movement is a multi-guru institution, if we overemphasize too much on the Diksha Guru, it can unnecessarily lead to fissures and conflicts. So ultimately, what do the Pandavas do? What does Ram do? Lord Ram, when he's in the forest, he learns from various teachers, various sages he meets, and he learns from them. Pandavas in the forest, they learn from Markandeya, they learn from Shaunaka, they learn from Narada, they learn from Vyasa. So the idea is, we focus on the principle of Shiksha, and we gain Shiksha. So learning a spiritual knowledge from whatever source Krishna makes available for us, we see that as Krishna's mercy, and we grow. So the overemphasis on initiation and initiating guru alone is what I was pointing to when I said that initiation and instruction were two separate things for Krishna. He was initiated by someone whose name also Bhagavatam doesn't mention, but the person who gave his instruction is treated as his guru. So our sampradaya is often said to be a shiksha sampradaya more than diksha sampradaya. So unfortunately, sometimes we make Diksha into everything. And we make our Diksha Guru as the basis of our defining identity in our movement. Well, that is not so necessary. We are all followers of Prabhupada. We are all trying to be devotees of Krishna. And by recognizing the importance of instruction as compared to initiation, we as a movement can actually live more harmoniously by respecting all Shiksha Gurus and being nourished by the various Shiksha Gurus, of course, along with Diksha Guru. So a devotee never disrespects or rejects the Diksha Guru, out of question. But a devotee doesn't let the Diksha Guru become a wall to relate with other devotees and especially with other Shiksha Gurus.
Thank you so much once again for your very valuable time and association and giving such a wonderful lecture and also answering each and every question. We are so grateful to you, Prabhuji. Let's pay our obeisances to Prabhuji and all the Vaishnavas in the call. Vancha Karta Sarvatya Sindhu Vacha Kalitanam Pavanadhyo Vaishnavayo Namo Namah.
Thank you, Prabhuji. Thank you, Balram. Jai Prabhuji. 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 Jai Prabh